previously on the Kunstler Cast.
I've canoed into work. It's 9 miles down the Hudson. But people, when they found out about it, the newspaper did a story about it. When they found out, they're saying, oh, geez, you have a lot of time on your hands. Because, you know, it's 4 hours a day, you know, 2 hours there, 2 hours back. And I was thinking, like, you probably got home at 5:30, turned the TV on, and the TV remained on until, like, 1 o'clock. And you're telling me I have a lot of time. Yeah.
And you got up from the sofa to just microwave some Hot Pockets. Dude, I don't have any time.
You're listening to the Kunstler Cast, a weekly conversation about the tragic comedy of suburban sprawl, featuring James Howard Kunstler, author of The Geography of Nowhere, The Long Emergency, and World Made by Hand. I'm Duncan Crary, and today's topic is Highway to Hell.
Hey, Jim, I haven't seen you in a long time here. How you doing?
It seems like ages, but it's only been about 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, we had to do some pre-recorded shows so we could get through the holidays.
Yeah.
So have you had any epiphanies? What do you know, suburbia is not so bad anymore?
Well, not being a Catholic, I don't have epiphanies in that sense. You know? No, and I haven't been granted a sainthood yet, although I'm waiting.
So otherwise, though, we're still on board. You're still not a big fan of the suburbs?
I'm amazed that you would ask me that question.
I'm just kidding. We got a listener call, though. I think it will help us start the new year off. So let me play that for you right now, Jim.
Hi, this is Jay Leslie calling from Palo Alto, California. I'd be curious to hear Jim's comments on recent political responses or governmental responses to the early stages of peak oil and the related credit crisis and financial turmoil. In the past, Jim identified the phenomenon known as the psychology of previous investment as a phenomenon that would prevent our society from addressing its predicament. And it seems to me, upon reviewing recent government responses, that Jim was absolutely correct. It seems that we are going to spend the last of our remaining wealth, or perhaps more accurately, we will use up the last of the world's goodwill towards us in terms of its willingness to lend us money, and waste that borrowed money on bailing out failed institutions that won't serve us in the future. Zombie banks, zombie insurance companies, zombie automakers. And furthermore, when we have a fiscal stimulus package, we'll spend it building roads and bridges for cars as opposed to railroads. This seems absolutely insane, and it gives me no sense of optimism for the future. I'd be curious to hear Jim's opinion on this topic. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work with your show.
Okay, Jim, well, I think that's a great question to start the new year off. I think a lot of our listeners are wondering the same thing.
And I think it is very much the topic of the day and the season, because we have come through this agonizing financial storm. It's not over. We may have just entered it, really. But the remedies are now being presented in the context of a new president coming on board with a new team, new policies, new objectives, and a great deal of hope invested in his ability to manage all this stuff. And we have heard a lot in the last couple of weeks about the fiscal stimulus idea of investing in infrastructure. And, of course, what disturbs me and a lot of other people is what is the target of this investment. It would seem to be highway stuff. Now, I'd make a distinction between the bridges and tunnels and the actual roadways. And the sense that I get is that a lot of this stuff is going to be aimed at bridges and tunnels, Largely because the failures of them have been so spectacular, like the one in Minneapolis, where, you know, you get a bridge over the Mississippi River just crumbles and, you know, a dozen people get killed.
Yeah.
There's a very real need, I think, out there to fix this stuff quickly. And I don't think that the public would stand for it not being fixed. However, it presents us with a real paradox because, first of all, it doesn't speak to what we're going to do about the actual roadways, you know? They are largely controlled by the states. And what we're seeing now is that the states, the municipalities, the counties are so broke out there that it's very likely that they're going to have to postpone whatever road maintenance they do.
I was amazed. I drove to Boston for the holidays. The Mass Pike, there was one stretch that was just all potholes. And as you pointed out in the long emergency, it's not safe to hit a pothole going 65 miles an hour.
No, it's very bad. And once that stuff starts, if you don't fix it pretty quickly, you get some really serious systemic breakdown. You know, back when I wrote Home from Nowhere, I think, I had a lot of conversations with highway engineers. And one of the things that impressed me, that really stayed with me, is they said that the highways in America have to be maintained at an absolutely excellent level of service, as they call it, level of service.
Right.
And once you get below that, the damage starts to snowball very, very quickly. And so this is what we face, is that the states are going to be functionally bankrupt and won't be able to do the kind of routine road repair. And the federal government will be out there repairing the bridges over the Mississippi River and the Ohio River and, you know, and the Wabash River and so on. So we'll have a bunch of bridges in good repair and highways that are disintegrating.
Right.
And so where does that leave us? You know, it leaves us basically with a big problem. So that's just one angle of the story. The other angle is the one that was raised by the caller, which is the psychology of previous investment, that we've put so much of our resources of the last 70 years and invested so much of our identity in this system for daily life, the highway, happy motoring, suburban system, that we can't imagine letting go of it or really substantially reforming it. So what you see coming out of that is a major campaign to sustain the unsustainable. Because in the long run, we really have to make other arrangements for daily life. The housing tracts out there, the whole commuter model of daily life is not going to be working for us. And, you know, the more money that we sink back into this sinkhole of investment, the sooner we're going to be functionally bankrupt as a society.
Well, Jim, I don't know all the figures, but soon-to-be President Barack Obama is talking about I don't know, spending what, $700 billion on
this? It was something like that, $800, a trillion.
Okay. And the idea behind it is also that it's going to be giving a lot of jobs, job opportunities to people to work on these projects.
And it's understandable that they would wish to do that.
Yeah.
I actually don't know for sure how much this includes other things like repairing and improving the electric grid, which is in very sorry shape. And really requires a lot of work and a lot of new equipment,
right.
Transformers, lines. It's all rusty, old, and needs to be changed out at enormous expense.
Right.
That's a big one. But I don't really know what other things they have in mind. So I'm imagining at this point that it's mostly highways, perhaps some electrical stuff.
I wanted to start the show by playing AC/DC's Highway to Hell. Of course, I don't have permission to play that music, but I sort of feel like we're going to be on the highway to hell here, because no matter what people are talking about, this is what Americans want to spend their money on, these highways. We're not going to be talking about commuter rail. I mean, here in this region, Jim, it would have been nice if I could have taken the light rail up to visit you in the next city up.
Well, people are probably getting sick of hearing me carry on about the need to restore passenger railroad service in America.
Right.
It's so obvious, so self-evident. I wish that we could wrap our collective minds around it. I wish that we could have maybe made that a condition of bailing out the auto companies, that they would, you know, start some kind of manufacturing of the rolling stock that we need to run on the rails, because obviously they're not tooled up for it now, you know, it's obvious.
Right.
But it wouldn't take that much. I mean, they do have the large assembly buildings, and they do have the lines and the robots and the equipment. Right now, if we want to get any kind of railroad cars, we have to go to Bombardier out of Quebec or some other foreign manufacturer. So, you know, I'm not going to go on too much about that, except to say this. We had an interurban transit system apart from the heavy rail passenger system that was the envy of the world at the turn of the previous century, you know, in the real heyday of the streetcar era, which was about 1890 to about 1925 or so. We had a fantastic parallel system of light rails that went all over the place, and our region was rich with them. You know, you could take basically a trolley from where you live in Troy, clear up to Warrensburg in the foothills of the Adirondacks and over to Washington County. And in fact, the interurban trolley lines would get you from Boston to Wisconsin with only one 20-mile interruption, which was located in New York State, oddly enough. Yeah. But back in the 1920s, that's how comprehensive the system was. And we were not as we were a poorer society then than we even are now, even with our financial meltdown and banking calamity. They were still not as wealthy a society as we are now. And so the idea that we can't build something like this is really preposterous.
But all of those streetcar systems and inner city, intra-city when you go between? What's the word, Jim, when you go between city?
Interurban transit, I believe. Yeah. Would be within your own city.
Okay. Those all had to be privately run, right? There weren't any public subsidies
for
those?
Well, I don't really know how the public-private partnerships, if there were any, worked. I think for the most part, they were indeed private companies. And, you know, let's not forget that a lot of them were connected with real estate development activity. You know, the streetcars were built in order to bring people to the new places that they were creating.
Yeah, streetcar suburbs.
The streetcar suburbs. Right. So that was a big part of it. And we actually don't know how many of those lines would have functioned at all without that component. So that leads us, of course, to the idea that, you know, history doesn't repeat itself. You can't go home again. We're not going to recapitulate the era between 1890 and 1920. You know, we're not going to live through that again. But we do know this is something we know how to do. You know, it's not rocket science. You don't have to figure out how to go to the moon. Basically, we're faced with the challenge of somehow replacing or augmenting a dying highway and happy motoring system with something else, some other kind of transport. And there will probably be more than just one option. You know, I mean, I could see people taking boats up the Hudson River. I've had correspondence this week with some guy on the net who seems to be promoting airships or zeppelins, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah. It sounds preposterous, I know, because, you know, I mean, it's just, it was something
that... It sounds awesome, actually.
Well, you know, it never worked out the first time, right? I mean, they blew up, they filled them with hydrogen, they blew up. We'd probably do it differently. I understand that they go a lot faster now than they did in the 1930s, to the degree that you could actually make a transoceanic journey in a day rather than 4 or 5 days or whatever it used to be. And that would be an improvement maybe over taking boats, because probably what will happen is, you know, jet plane air service is going to become more and more limited and more something for only very wealthy people.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, we may actually get to the point where we have no air transport at all, at least, in jet planes as we've known it. So what are we going to do? My guess is we're probably going to be able to run ships across the ocean, assuming that Europe is a peaceful place and other places that we go are not, you know, assuming there's no war breaking out.
Jim's talking about the distant future as our energy crisis ramps up.
I don't know how distant it is. I could see some of this happening easily within 10, 20 years. That's not that far ahead because, you know, we're going to get into so much trouble with oil fairly soon, I think, despite the fact that the price is now very low. I believe people have been pretty faked out by what's going on in the oil markets. But we will get into trouble probably pretty soon. And I don't think the destiny of the airline industry is very bright. And we're going to have to do something about it if we're going to go long distances.
So, Jim, getting back to the highway to hell topic.
Okay, I'm sorry I strayed into the wilderness, into the thickets of futurology.
Dude, and if you bring up Zeppelins, you're welcome to stray anytime. Yeah.
And by the way, I don't know that I really, I don't know that he really persuaded me that we're going to be doing that, but it was interesting to hear someone propose it. And he didn't come off as a wacko, you know?
Right. People always talk about there's not enough money, you know, to build a light rail infrastructure. I mean, particularly in this area, but I've traveled around the country and heard that same line. But we're going to be spending a lot of money to fix the highways. So what's going on here?
Well, there's no question that it's much less expensive to build light rail networks than it is to build highways. You know, I think a single highway interchange, one of those four-leaf clover interchanges.
Our national flower, I think, is what Lewis Mumford called it.
Exactly. I think they cost like $80 to $100 million just to fix them, you know, just to repair the ramps and the concrete and stuff and resurface them. So there's no question that it's less expensive to create light rail networks. However, the problem at the moment is that so much capital is evaporating from our system in the form of bad debt going into a black hole from which it will never emerge again, that we have reason to doubt that we're going to have the capital resources to finance any of these things. And it's a tragedy that this has occurred.
Well, you know, Jim, I was just listening to you talking about the amount of money going into fixing the highways. A lot of highways would be useful to convert into light rail, right? They talk about that around here all the time. There's a big I-87 could have light rail.
Sure. Well, we do have the median strips, and indeed we have even the extra lanes. And
so would you support, suppose this new initiative to rebuild the highways, suppose it were going to cut down some of the lanes on the highway and convert those into light rail for short distance travel? Would you support
that? Well, maybe, and I'm not even convinced that you'd have to cut down on the lanes. Probably, you know, the best thing that we could do right away would be to start a couple of experimental lines in places like in our region, you know, running from Albany to Schenectady, Troy, and Warrensburg, and through the corridor heading into the North Country.
These are small cities of not even 100,000 people living in the core.
No, but they once were magnificently connected by light rail. So the bottom line is we do have these corridors that are now being devoted to cars, right? It seems to me that we could try at least a few experimental light rail lines going to these places. And, you know, whether it's, you know, in our region or going from Atlanta to Chattanooga or going from Dayton to Columbus, Ohio, you know, there are plenty of opportunities to do this all over the country. And it would really be heartwarming to see us do something other than just fix bridges and tunnels.
Well, the more the better our highway system is running, the more sprawl we're going to see, right, Jim? I mean, the highways lead
to
sprawl.
Well, that's the theory. I don't think we're going to see any more sprawl. You know, we've got so much suburban housing inventory just sitting out there
empty
and starting to delaminate, you know, that I don't think that the commercial production, I don't think that the production home builders are going to be back at it ever again. And I don't think we're going to resume seeing any of this activity. That we're now entering a bloodbath of commercial real estate collapsing. We don't need any more strip malls. We're entering a retail bloodbath in which scores, perhaps hundreds of national chains are going to be bankrupt. And the strip malls are going to lose a lot of tenants. And many of the strip malls will go bankrupt, and many of the real estate investment trusts that own the malls and the strip malls and the power centers are going to go bankrupt. So we don't need any more of this. We're way over-retailed for a society that's not going to be a consumer society. So that's not my fear, that if we get a whole bunch of highway infrastructure activity going, that it's going to provoke yet another round of suburban building. I don't think that's going to happen at all. I view this as really just propping up a system that is now limping and falling on its knees.
Okay, Jim, well, the listener raised a lot of questions in his call, and we're probably going to have to keep answering those in future programs. So thanks a lot for chatting with me today.
It was nice to be here. It was a good topic.
Thanks.
Hi, Jim and Duncan. I want to thank you guys for a great podcast. I did want to comment on your discussion of the Berkshire's local currency program, as I felt that you guys didn't give this initiative a fair shake. Jim described it as a gimmicky thing, a community morale thing more than a real currency, and something to boost people's self-esteem. While Jim's critique may have some merit, it does not do justice to the really great work that people have done on the project. Local currency projects are important. Sure, few people, if anybody, has yet to achieve a true transformation of our monetary system, but anybody that's making an attempt, generating debate in the process, and focusing on local economies deserves our support instead of a dismissal as gimmicky. I encourage you and your listeners to have a listen to our podcast interview on the Agro-Innovations podcast, which can be found at agroinnovations.com/podcast, with Sarah Hearn of the Berkshire's Local Currency Program. The program is discussing the possibility of decoupling from the dollar and linking printing money with indicators of local production. I think Duncan, Jim, and your listeners, all advocates of localism, can appreciate this type of initiative.
You've been listening to the KunstlerCast featuring James Howard Kunstler. To leave a listener comment, call toll-free at 866-924-9499. Send email to letters@kunstlercast.com. You can download episodes of this program, read transcripts, learn about our theme music, join our mailing list, find out how you can book Jim to speak in your area, and talk about the show with other listeners at kunstlercast.com. I'm your host, Duncan Crary. Thanks for listening.